Department of Philosophy and the College of Liberal Arts and Creative Arts. And thanks to our musical guests, Adam Schulman on piano, David Ewell on bass, Mark Lee on drums, and Tiffany Austin, the impeccable Tiffany Austin, on vocals. The senior producer of Philosophy Talk is Devin Strelovich. Laura McGuire is our director of research. And our marketing director is Cindy Princebaum. Daniel Brandon is our technical director.
Support for Philosophy Talk comes from Stanford University and the partners at our online community of thinkers.
The views expressed or misexpressed on this program do not necessarily represent the opinions of Stanford University or of our other funders.
Not even when they're true and reasonable.
The conversation continues at our website, philosophytalk.org, where you too can become a partner in our community of thinkers. I'm Ken Taylor.
And I'm Josh Landy. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking. Thanks a lot, folks.
Nice work if you can get it, and if you get it, won't you tell me how?
If classical is your genre, WHFR is the place to be in the late night hours until 10 a.m. 7 days a week. From Beethoven and Mozart to Bach and Brahms, let it lull you to sleep at night and wake you up in the morning. Or for your night owls, enjoy the soothing sounds of classical music all night long. 89.3 FM or WHFR.FM on your computer. Make WHFR the station for classical.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Sterling, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now's the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek, along with Susan McGraw. Pleased to be with you this Friday afternoon as we kick off the month of May and say goodbye to some good friends here at Henry Ford College, I guess, at least tomorrow. Hey, Susan, welcome. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you, Alan. Always a pleasure as well. And yes, it is the bittersweet time of season here at HFC when we let our hawks fly high into the next phase of their lives. We're talking about commencement, and so excited that this year's commencement is back in person, which we certainly would have loved to but couldn't the past couple of years. Lovely ceremonies, but this is going to be just incredible. So we say a congratulations to our graduates. Two ceremonies, a morning and an afternoon one, and they tend to be just incredibly emotional, powerful. I never miss them, and we just are so proud of our graduates.
Well, and every class is special, but I have to say, certainly after the 2 years that they've been through, this class is really has had a college experience unlike any other, and hopefully that ability to adapt to change and stay with the program is something that's going to serve them well, certainly throughout the next few years and their lives as well, wherever their lives take them.
Yeah. And we have to do this shout out. It is true. We say this. It is a true thing. Once a hawk, always a hawk. So I've been a hawk for as long as I can remember. And so just because they're flying to this next thing doesn't mean they can't fly back and circle around and see us and visit. And I'm not just talking to our graduates tomorrow. I'm talking to our alumni from 25 years ago, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? So consider this your home always.
Well, we'll wrap up by saying congratulations to the class of 2022, and that also includes those probably who graduated in December at the end of fall 2021, and those who might still have a class or two to take this summer as well. The commencement activities take place tomorrow at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Yeah, as mentioned, two ceremonies. There's one at 10 a.m. and one at 1:30, and it's based on whatever particular academic discipline or program that you are graduating from here at Henry Ford College.
Yes, and I can share in the afternoon ceremony, both Debbie Dingell and Debbie Stabenow will be special guest speakers, honorary hawks. And I know the morning ceremony will be equally as wonderful. So so we say congratulations, a well-earned, well-deserved celebration.
All right, so that's recognition number one that we've taken care of so far. Recognition number two, this is whatever, something that obviously we've known for a little while, but obviously this will probably, well, we're assuming the last commencement with our president, Russ Cavalhuna, officiating. What do you do to run a commencement, sir? Do you officiate, or what does that work?
I like
how
that.
Does that work?
Yeah,
okay.
That.
Anyway, with him up there on at the podium, I guess, basically. Mm-hmm. At least this time around.
Yes. Our President Cavalhuna will be leaving us at the in midsummer to take on another role. And we're very excited for him and proud of him. We're going to miss him, certainly, but very happy that we can have this commencement time together for students to have that final meet, welcome and congratulations from our president. But we will say welcome and congratulations one last time to our president at on this show next week. So next Friday's Journal show. Our guest will be none other than President Cavalhuna, sort of an exit interview, if you will.
I was going to say, it was one of his first official duties at Henry Ford College was to stop by the program, and we couldn't let him leave without having him back on the show at least one more time.
Got lots of questions for him.
All right, so that's recognition number two. Let's see, a busy weekend, starting off a busy month, busy summer, all of that kind of stuff. Recognition number three. And I'm sorry, Mom, I had totally forgotten that Mother's Day was on. I'm talking to my mother, obviously. Was this coming Sunday? I thought it was a week from Sunday, but lo and behold, this Sunday is Mother's Day.
Yes, to our mothers, our grandmothers, our aunts, our cousins, our any influential and inspirational woman in your life, we can all wear that badge as mother, Mother Earth. You know, so many mothers to thank and be grateful for, but it is certainly one of my proudest accomplishments and my most favorite thing to do is being a mother. And so to my fellow moms out there, I say happy Mother's Day and congratulations to you.
Well, that's going to be obviously our topic today on the WHFR Journal. We're going to bring you a program. It's a really interesting one. And just like, I suppose, obviously not speaking from experience, but experience as a parent, there's some good, there's some bad, there's some ups, there's some downs. It's a program called Mother Minds Mother's Day Special. Who are our mothers and how have they shaped our lives? This Mother's Day, we hear from 10 people around the world who talk about their mothers, the good, the bad, and the messy. Stories of 10 people from the United States, Denmark, Burundi, Brazil, China, Mexico, the Czech Republic, and Wales reflect on relationships with the women who gave them life and influenced how they live it. So that's going to be coming up next right here on the WHFR Journal. Susan, a happy Mother's Day to you as well. And we're just going to take a back seat and enjoy this program.
This is Mother Mine.
There is nothing she couldn't handle. She can do anything she wants to. She's very strong, very beautiful. Dark hair, dark skin, dark eyes. All of this I have after her. I mean, I also have dark hair, dark skin, dark eyes. So I would say that we are very similar to each other, but also have a couple of things after my dad. So I can't lie about my parents because when you see me and when you see them, you can guess that, yeah, we are the same family. But also, I can see a woman who is very insecure in some ways. She thinks that she is very fat, but she's not. I mean, she's not like small, but she's also not fat. And I think she's a beautiful woman. But she has this from her family that her grandmother, she used to tell her that she's fat. So now when her back hurts her or something, she will not go for a massage because she will not allow anyone to touch her back or to touch her at all because she thinks she's fat and she should be ashamed of her body. But it's not true. I mean, we shouldn't be ashamed of our bodies. I mean, our bodies are wonderful, wonderful. They've been through so much with us. And her body has been here for almost 60 years. So her body went through a lot. When she was a little girl, she had this accident. She was skiing and she fell down and she cutted her face with this ski somehow, I don't know how, but she damaged the muscle on her face. There is no scar or whatever, but when she's angry or when she is in some deep emotion, you can see her cheek, you know, under her eye, you can see that the cheek is just ticking, like doing pip, 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 pip. And that's when you can say that she's angry. I mean, you can't see it in the face. Her eyes are calm and there is no emotion on her lips or whatever, but you can see the cheek ticking. And that's when you know there is a problem. But she doesn't speak, usually. Which is what my father hates, because he is the kind of guy who wants to speak about everything and sometimes very loud, like he's not screaming, like there's no... But he just, when there is a problem, he wants to speak about it and find a solution, you know. But she is this kind of woman who doesn't speak about her emotions. One time, we went to a holiday, you know, we went to seaside together. And we were in Greece. It was the evening. We were sitting, eating dinner and chatting and enjoying the seaside. And then suddenly she told me that like half a year ago, that time, that she wanted to kill herself, because, you know, me and brother of mine, we were adults that time. It's like, I don't know, 10 years ago or something, and we left our house, we left the city. We have a big family house in the city where I was born. And, you know, they stayed here alone with one dog, sausage dog, so it's not a big dog. So she probably wanted to have something to live for. So they tried to have another baby. And they were not successful. So they went for some, like, medical help. And then she got pregnant. And she was pregnant for a couple of months. And then, she miscarried. And that was devastating for her. And then, after half a year or something, we were, you know, sitting there in Greece, eating dinner, enjoying the seaside. And then she told me that when she was going from the hospital, she was driving the car and she wanted to kill herself. She wanted to crash the car. I saw her emotions. I saw everything. She was not only my mother, she was also a mother of someone else who was not born and will never be born.
My whole life I was more open with my mother to talk about anything. She was the one who talked to me about sex, about drugs, about virtually everything. I remember, I don't know, 14, 15, we were in the kitchen cooking or something, and she just said, "Oh, have you ever smoked marijuana?" And I thought to myself, I'm sick of lying. I'm too old to keep lying about this. It's so insignificant. So I said, yeah. How many times? I don't know. I can't remember. And from that point, there was no more taboo about it. We went to Amsterdam, me and my brother. She said, okay, did you go to the Bulldog? And I said, no, not the Bulldog. Did you go to coffee shop? Well, to some. I was around 20, 21, can't remember exactly, but I was in university already. And they were arguing a lot. Well, my whole life, my parents had trouble not arguing with themselves. There was some cheating along the way, so I don't really know the details, but I know there was some cheating on both sides. So they got a little separated. They were talking about divorce, and she came to me to speak, hey, I love you guys, but the relation with your father is not that good, and I may have a relationship with another man. It was kind of shock. I couldn't really figure that out. I just told her, okay, I'm grown up. My brother is also grown up. We don't have nothing to say to you about your decisions. Or we don't have to have an opinion on that. I just hope you're happy. And then, I think 2 or 3 days after that talk, she was at the airport. She was a stewardess. I can't remember exactly what kind of thing I had to bring her at the airport, so I was driving there. And by the way back on the highway, I saw her car. She was already in the flight inside the airplane, and someone was driving her car, and was a man. And at that point I said, so there really is someone, and not just a ghost, a faceless person. There was a dead guy. But in the end, I don't really know what happened. My parents just came back together, and, well, they survived the pandemic. For her birthday, that was 2 days ago, I asked what kind of gift she wanted, and she just said, "Go, just give this money to whoever needs. This pandemic struck so hard that so many people with hunger and much worse situation than me, so just give them." That's the kind of person she is. She tries to help everybody. She helped her sister when she had some financial issues, bought her a house, bought her a car. I was a kid, but she really helped a lot. She saw her sister as a mother, because my mom lost her mother when she was 15. So when I was 27, yeah, I was almost married with the ex-wife, and I cheated on her with a woman from São Paulo, and this woman got pregnant. I took the DNA tests, it confirmed it was mine. So she said to me, okay, if you don't want to get involved with that, I won't force you. And I said, okay, my priority now is to reestablish my relationship. And for 5 years, my son's five first years, I had no relationship with him. And my mother never agreed on that. And it was really hard 5 years because we have expression in Portuguese that you have a goat on the room. I don't know if there is something similar in English, but it's that situation when something is uncomfortable among a group of people or some people, but no one wants to talk about that. And every time during these 5 years I met my mom, we just had a goat in the room. I think I am a journalist involved in social issues, a social democrat, kind of socialist person because of her. I'm a very autonomous person because of her, even though she tends to interfere. And the way I do things with all my heart reflects a lot the way she does.
I think sometimes I've sugarcoated some of what I remember her as because she's no longer here. She had ambitions for us and she wanted us to be certain things, and that would probably have been tiring and annoying in the long run, but our mother died when my twin and I were 21, which was way too soon, and we sometimes talk about where she would be and how she would react to certain things that were happening now. And mostly we think of, oh, she'd be really proud of us now if we did this. Oh, better do it then. She was an eco-feminist and she had lots of friends that would meet up and talk about where the world was going and how we had to change it. And there were sometimes very fearful moments about whether the world was actually going to survive and whether we were going to be a part of it. So she was always very good at making sure that we knew that it was going to, but it was up to us. And I think she restored this feeling of, it is up to you. If you want it to happen, it's not going to happen by itself. I think if it had been her choice, we would all have been activists full on all the time. And sometimes when I see myself picking up on something that she actually did 25 years ago, 30 years ago, it just makes me smile and think, oh, here I am. She'd be happy now. You don't know what other mothers are like. You just know that what you have is obviously either the best or the worst, but you don't really know what other people have. So when you see them as a real person is when they somehow break away from the frame of what you're supposed to be like as a mother. And she got cancer when she was 44, 45, and she lived for another 6 years. And I just remember one day when she had had a call from the doctor who didn't understand her choices of how to deal with her illness, and she showed her vulnerability about being attacked by the doctor and for not taking the right choices. That was hard for her because she had to
really, really fight for what she believed in. And I don't think we as kids understood how strong she had to be in order to make her choice. There's no bad conscience lingering about the time we haven't spent together because of her leaving this world at 50. I think that there's more of a let's rejoice, let's be happy we've got this far. I'm 54 today, so I've lived 4 more years than my mother, and that's celebration worthy. And I owe a lot of who I am to her. She installed a good portion of the power of beauty, the power of surrounding yourself and making the most of life. It's such a precious thing to have, and we often forget how lucky we are just to be here.
Every 2 minutes, a woman in the U.S. is diagnosed with breast cancer. And in that split-second moment in time, her life changes forever. The toll of breast cancer is great. The need to support those who are battling the disease today is even greater. And that's why when others look away, Susan G. Komen leans in. We're fighting alongside patients because we know one moment can change a lifetime. Fighting breast cancer takes funding for research to discover the next new treatment, providing access to quality and affordable health care, and people willing to take action by raising funds and raising their voice to advocate for others. United by hope, we can end breast cancer. Join our fight. Save lives.
I'm what's called a bear dreamer, so I've had visions all my life of bears, and kind of a spiritual thing for sure. And I was looking for somebody that could make sense of that, and it just led me to Joanna, and we developed the relationship, and shared stories and visions, and she shared so much with me, and she ended up adopting me. I would have been about 35 at the time. So I'm an adopted son of hers in the bear clan of the Passamaquoddy. So she lived her life in a way that, I'm going to give. I'm going to give all the time. It was the most uncanny thing because it would come back to her. Like she would literally give everything away. And then by evening, somebody would drop by with some moose meat or deer meat or, supplies for her, go out shopping. She lived her life totally that way. She taught people to forgive whatever the troubled background it was that you came up in. That whole thing about forgiveness, it doesn't mean that you have to abide by the behavior that was caused. But that forgiveness itself is such a healing and powerful tool. And I've personally witnessed that, through the web of my life for sure. Today is my 39th year in recovery. And so, although I talked openly, I certainly didn't talk about the particulars, like, some of the crazy stuff, being arrested around the country and, just mocking police and getting, some of the crazy stuff I did way back. When I first got into recovery, I was a really, really hurting individual. And, I honor her as well as my wife and my wife's mother for, teaching me to be the person I am today. I like to think that I'm somebody that tries to help somebody in the morning and in the afternoon and all times between. So somebody that's compassionate, somebody that's caring. Obviously there's things that happen in your life you get upset with, but trying to detach from the emotions behind that and to try to to really help where you can. It's not always possible, but you know, you try your best. So I think it's that try mind. I think about her every single day. She taught me to pray in the morning. She taught me to pray in the evening. So I think about her in those two times, and sometimes I'll smell a little sweet grass or sage, and I'm not sure if it's just something ingrained in my mind, but you know, I think of her often in the morning and in the evenings. She permeates everything that I do and everything that I am. She's taught me how to be in this world, which I find so incredibly significant and so powerful. When I found her and stepped on the path with the tradition, you know, it was kind of like a coming home. It felt as if it was coming home to me.
Unlike Mama, Papa had been privileged to go to school. He became a primary school teacher, which was a huge position at the time. For Dad, he had achieved, and the future of his family was secured. But when he got married, my mother assessed the land they had in the family and considered it was not enough. She had energy to exploit more than that. Hence, she told my father, "This land is too small for me. Support me, please, that I may buy more for us." This was not asking for money to buy the land, but for moral support, agreement, and standing with her when she goes into buying. My mom was selling Ugwa Agwa, a local banana beer, and Primus, and it is from the profit of this trade that she bought the big land where we have always lived since I was 10 years old. I remember Mama as someone who was never satisfied with our achievements. She always and in everything wanted the best. When she gives you a task, she would come to control and ensure you did a perfect job. When I grew up, I'd not have any freedom to disagree with her. That was not an option for children in our family. She commanded and we obeyed. We didn't like it though, but we came to appreciate it later in life. One time in these cyclic conflicts Burundi went through, our big house was put on fire, of course using petrol, because it is built in bricks and stones. But it burned completely, as the top and the inside all were destroyed. Only the walls remained. My mother knew those who did it. And we all kept pressurizing her so that she could tell us the names to take them to police, have them arrested, and possibly get them pay back what they had destroyed. She was not willing to denounce them. One day, when I was asking that question almost like a hundredth time, she responded, "Do you want me to lose a house and also use my neighborhood?" I also remember Mama bringing us together as children in a closed room to teach us that Dad's service and advantages like a luxury house, cars, money, and others are not our asset. Insisting that we need always to remember that the day he will no more be in service, this will go. I saw my mother's situation changing because my dad had a car accident, which eventually paralyzed him for the rest of his life. From the comfortable living conditions my mother had been enjoying since my father was promoted by Prince Louis Rwagasore from a primary school teacher to a commissaire d'arrondissement, with all entailed privileges and advantages. After the accident, things were going to be very tough. Mama had to consider how she would take care of 9 children, going back to the village, paying school fees, taking care of Dad, and so forth and so forth. I was very young, but I could read the dilemmas and helplessness on her face. I even offered to stop my high school, do 1 year in a teacher's school, and go to be a teacher to help my mother. She categorically refused, arguing that I was very clever, that she would wait, and I would help her when I finish all my education cycle. I'm so grateful to God. I was able to show her my gratitude and help her when she needed it most. I stood on her side in her last days.
When I look at my daughter, I would think, what a adorable yet fragile little human being that needs so much attention and love. And I try to be really sensitive to her needs. But that's when, I guess, the anger sets in. Because I remember how those needs of my own were neglected when I was a child. My mother came from a family of intellectuals who lost everything in those revolutions in the 60s and 70s. So I guess she always had a very strong sense of deprivation. The only thing she kept was her pride, and I guess the esteem for knowledge. I grew up with a lot of books. All of them came from my mother. My father was from the countryside, and then later he went to the city to make a life for himself. He tried so hard because where he started was nowhere. My father didn't even finish primary school. I guess this unlikely marriage was only possible in a time that was so turbulent. But at that time, my mother, despite that she's a very good-looking woman, well-educated, well-spoken, nobody would take her because she had a family that during the revolutions was targeted. On the other hand, I guess, he had nothing to lose. This boy came from the countryside who just needed a wife, better a good-looking one. My mother, on the other hand, she's a romantic. I know her. So I guess there had to be an element of love, real or imagined. Anyways, she married my father, and the two tortured each other for some 40 years now. Oh, these tears and yelling and anger and curse, not just the fight that my parents had. These are, you know, small cases. But all the aftermath, when my father left after another major fight and I was stuck with my mother and she would pour all her emotions on me, I felt I was standing on a piece of land that just had an earthquake, and I was a one-person rescue team. I remember my parents would have a fight, and then there would be days of silence in the house. And then my mother would say to me, "Why don't you say something?" Because I was, as a kid, terrified to speak. I didn't know how to break the silence. And my mother would put the blame on me and say, "Why didn't you say anything? Why do you become silent? Me and your father just had a fight, so we are not speaking to each other, but you have no reason to not speak." So basically, she would force me to speak in the house, to tell jokes, to talk about all the things that happened at school. And she would even say that I was a person that creates this bad atmosphere because I became so silent as well. And later, when I became a teenager who understood something about love between a man and woman, my mother would cry on my shoulder and told me that she never had a love in her life and that she just had really shitty fate. Mingku, as we say in Chinese, which means, I guess, just bad fate. It just happened one day that I realized no matter what I do, no matter what I say, she will always be unhappy. So what difference does it make? Why don't I set myself free and try not to be responsible for it? My mother came to live with me these days to help take care of the granddaughter. It has been a difficult process for me because, you know, raising my daughter keeps me thinking, keeps me looking back. So one day, I finally confronted her. I told her all the pain that she causes by not managing her emotions at all, by telling me how miserable she was, by crying in front of me constantly, by telling bad things about my father to me, by always complaining and by blaming me for not being able to fix their relationship. I complained for a long time. And my mother just listened and listened. And I think that silence was, "I hear you and I'm sorry," though she didn't say that. And finally, she said, "I didn't have a way. 我没有办法. I didn't have a way."
He has an overbite that makes him look like a cartoon character, a slightly crooked eye, and an uncommonly wrinkly neck. In the right light, he can look a little like a garden gnome. And he'll wear a bow tie just because. Sure, you might call him a little quirky, but that's exactly what makes him so perfect. Tuna is a 3-year-old Chihuahua Dachshund mix with more than 700,000 followers on Instagram, and it all started because he was adopted. You can't buy a best friend like Tuna, but you can adopt one. Help us save them all at bestfriends.org.
All right, y'all. I got something here for you now.
Hey, I'm the
the jumper, the one who came out of Louisiana on the back of a Trailways bus. I have a show called Cruising and Bluesing in the Nighttime right here on WHFR 89.3, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. each and every Wednesday night.
This is why you work so hard to pay the mortgage. Because home is more than four walls and a roof. It's that porch swing and a summer evening. It's everybody over for Sunday dinner. And your family sleeping in their own beds at night. Making home affordable is a free government resource that can make paying the mortgage easier. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov.
Good night, Mama.
This is why. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
She passed away a month ago, so I'm constantly thinking about her. Just anything reminds me of her. But I know for certain that once this process wears down, I'm going to think about her probably the most while eating tacos, because that was a tradition of us to go and have tacos for dinner. She always used to order two steak tacos with salsa verde, and that was her thing. So I don't think I'm ever going to be able to have tacos without thinking about her. In my late teens and early adult years, I started getting to know her more like a person, and she started trusting me with things about her upbringing, about her past, about her personal issues and doubts and, everyday thoughts. And that's when we started having this, person-to-person relationship and not this vertical mother-son relationship. Ever since the pandemic, we got this tradition of talking, FaceTiming every night. And yeah, we used to talk about pretty much anything, Netflix, films, or political matters, or her back pain, because she broke one of her lumbar vertebrae in the past year, and for a year she had a lot of pain, and we were discussing all of her options, and the thing that killed her was an operation. When we finally decided to have a specific operation, she couldn't handle it. Like, days after her procedure, she developed a thrombosis, which killed her 5 days after her operation. What I remember most about her, probably how she used to solve problems for people around her, not only for us, her sons and daughter, but also any other family member or friend of her. Whenever anyone got any kind of issues, she always tried to find ways to help people around her. By instance, maybe someone had an operation or something, and they needed someone to stay in the hospital with them, and she was always the first person who offered to a thing like that. One of her main ways of being was not playing the victim, no matter how hard life was at some point. She hated being a burden or just being the center of attention in a negative way. And I think I'm like her in that regard. I don't like people noticing my presence when I'm feeling down or when I'm sick. I like to get away and to not cause any pity or compassion or shame to anyone. So that was the thing she hated the most. And also, she used to enjoy the little things. Like I said, those two steak tacos, that was like a huge moment for her in the week or in the day. And I think I'm also able to enjoy a lot of those little things, like hot coffee and getting on with the rest of the day.
She would swear that she'd rung the bell or
She had an Acme police whistle, and that was the whistle to bring me in from the fields. We lived down a long, long lane, so anybody else to play with were too far away. So I would just roam the fields, and there were 40 acres available to me. And that meant I could be a longish way from the house, because it was absolutely perfectly safe in those days. Nothing was going to happen to one. And sometimes I would genuinely not hear it, which was hard to get away with. So he would very often have an argument, why wasn't I back in on time? And that meal was ready and spoilt. And what one didn't talk to her about was all the naughty things that one had done and one had best kept to oneself, probably. And bearing in mind that they were the vicarage family, my father was the vicar, so she was the vicar's wife. Had I not lived up to that for any reason, then I would have been very sorry indeed, yes. And extended families on both sides as well. So there were family members of mine all over the place. You never seem to be able to get away from family. So couldn't go far wrong. She was disabled to a great extent with rheumatoid arthritis. So that's something I do certainly remember most about her, the struggle into stockings, the struggle into shoes, clothes. She never could comb her own hair. Long trips to anywhere were out, and climbing stairs were out. Anything that took ma'am for long walks was out. Her hands were in the most dreadful mess, with fingers crossing one another and doing all sorts of things. Her feet likewise, and they never went away. She was in a wheelchair after giving birth to me, but there were 5 years between me and my sister. But then within those 5 years, she got out of the wheelchair, out of all that, and only had sticks. And then later on, when she and her sister would go arm in arm, hand in hand somewhere, arm in arm usually, then she didn't have a stick at all. I'm ever so grateful that I did not inherit her rheumatism, which has surprised many, a doctor having a look at other things and whatnot. And others have said, well, it requires some trauma to bring it on, maybe. It was reckoned that in her case, it came about through a motorbike accident. A brother-in-law took her out on a new motorbike of his one evening, and lost control going down the country lanes somewhere. So mother was thrown off and over the bicycle, but she always reckoned she was very proud of a leather, quite long-length coat that she'd bought for university, and was, as I say, quite proud of it, but mum was wearing it. And she reckoned that it saved her a lot, because, as I say, there were marks and whatnot all over the coat, but it had not got through to her. When I have some ache and pain or something of my own, I think to myself, wow, ma'am had years and years of this, and puts my little problem very much into context. She was so stoical, never complained. Her grit and determination certainly shows through in me, yes, when others may well have given up on the cause and can't be done. I shall be there and it will be done, yeah.
Early in my life, I don't remember a lot about her. Growing up, we had maids until after my father died. And so I don't remember a lot about her. I don't know what she did during the day. If we stayed home sick, one of the maids would take care of us. And she pretty much let us do anything we wanted. She didn't put a damper on anything we did. Once when I was late teenager, my brother and I took a bicycle trip from New Hampshire down to Woods Hole and then took a ferry over to Martha's Vineyard. Mom wrote a note that she had notarized that said, Amanda and Anthony have my permission to travel wherever they want, and something to that effect. Anyway, we took it with us. I wish I still had it. She wanted me to have things like permanents and wear frilly dresses. And fortunately, I had a younger sister who sort of took over that role. So when Toby got to be the age where, you know, she could be feminine, Mom sort of let me be. I tended to wear boys' clothes, baggy things. I played with the boys. I wasn't home a lot. And when I was, I spent a lot of my time reading. My father taught me to play tennis. The things I really valued, I think my father taught me. How to use his tools and what a good sportsman was like. And at one point, Alda had me take ballroom dancing because she thought that I should learn how to dance and be a girl. And I hated it. And my father traveled a lot, so he didn't actually know about all this until one time when he said he'd walk me to dance class. And as we were walking, he asked me why I was so quiet. And I said, well, I hate dance. I'm always picked last, and I just hate it. So he said, well, why do you go? And I said, because Mom said I had to. So he said, well, if you don't like it, you don't have to go. And we turned around and walked home. So he stood up for me for things like that and kind of saw me for who I was, which I always thought Mom didn't. She loved beautiful things. She loved decorating her house. Our house was always elegant in a certain way, but not precious, but it was beautiful. She cared about colors and how things looked. And she was very attractive. She was quite beautiful and attractive and attracted men and liked being attractive to men, and had a sort of coquettishness about her. So one of the things that I was clear about was that I did not want to be like her in that way. So I didn't want to be attractive to men. So when I met Flynn, who's my husband, I didn't try at all to have him like me, although I liked him a lot. But the friendship part of it was important at first. And then later we became lovers, and that was wonderful. But I was careful not to let my mom in too much on my relationship with Flynn because I didn't want her to spoil it for me. My mother and I never really fought. It was more of a sort of a standoff. I don't ever remember yelling at her or her yelling at me, but we disagreed on a lot of things. When my father died, I kind of thought that the wrong parent had died. I needed some authority. I needed somebody whom I thought was strong, and I didn't think my mother was that, although in retrospect, I think she actually was. Near the very end of her life, when she was in her 90s, she and I grew very close. And I'm glad for those last few years with her. I learned a lot from her about her, and we could laugh and talk about what we knew of each other and what we didn't know of each other. And I could see more of who she was. And as I reflected, I could think about who she was and the wonderful things she had done. She was actually quite a remarkable person. She raised 7 children. She did theater, staging theater, and she did a little directing, community theater. She had a love for words. She loved words. She was a poet, and she knew how to use words. And so there were lots of things about her that I didn't pay attention to, but that in thinking back were quite remarkable. And also, the more I got to know about her, the more I really appreciated the kind of way she led her life. She led her life the way she wanted to lead it, and I guess I lead my life the way I want to lead it. Before she died, I told her I wanted to plant a tree in our yard in honor of her, in memory of her. I said, what would she like? And she wanted an ornamental plum, which was a typical thing. It's a beautiful tree, but it's kind of delicate in a certain way. And it has beautiful pink blossoms. And I look out on it every day and I love it. It almost died at one point. People told me to chop it down, dig it up and plant another tree, but I couldn't quite do it. It's like I couldn't quite let go of my mother. So I, not knowing anything about pruning, I took some pruning things to it and cut out all the rotten parts or the parts that weren't working and really trimmed it way back, and if it didn't just come back, sort of like my mother. My mother almost died at one point, and everybody thought she was going to die, but she didn't. She survived and lived to be 99. So I look out on it every day, and I love it, and I think of her, and I think of her. She's like that tree. That tree's like her.
Thank you for listening to Mother Mine. I'd like to say a huge thank you to each and every one of the contributors to the Mother Mine Project. I'd also like to thank all of the wonderful international producers who helped me recruit participants for this project. Mother Mine was made possible by the generous support of our Kickstarter backers. Thank you so much. Mother Mine is produced by me, Katie Semro, in conjunction with our mothers ourselves.
Buenas noches, mi amor. Duerme bajo el rosal con las manos.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? Their age? The way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school?
Not because he's a boy, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night, not because she's sick,
but because she went to bed without enough to eat?
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover,
not for fun, just so he can have dinner?
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch,
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat?
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger.